Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Indiazi Truth. Back with us is Nima Al-Khurshid, and we're here to discuss, well, the first news. Ding dong, the witch is dead. I think at this point, there's a lot more people that are rejoicing around the world, the news that came this morning, than the people that are sad. There are sad people, too. And what else are we talking about but fill us in. Ah,
yeah.
Allergies.
Lindsey Graham, I don't know if the people...
You know, guys, we talk on the show a lot about wars, power politics, wars of attrition. And as I've said many times, as much more brilliant minds than myself have said over the years, armies travel in their stomachs. But in this case, it's a lot more than food. You have to arm with modern weapon systems your soldiers. So armies travel not only on their stomachs, but also on logistics, supply chains, and even resources, the resources that are in the ground. Now, everybody talks about purified, processed, rare earth minerals that mostly come, the magnets that come out of China. But there's other minerals that are mundane. Minerals such as tungsten. Tungsten that is critical for everything. Almost every weapon system that Washington is producing right now, every jet, every tank, every ship, a lot of the submunitions and the main gun rounds, missiles, in some way, all of them contain tungsten. The U.S. hasn't mined tungsten since 2015, 10 years, preferring to buy from abroad. But something that these last conflicts and the Gulf War, what they've shown is that the American supply chain is actually very, very brittle. Washington's understanding this, and they're moving as fast as they can to solve this gaping hole. This is an issue that they're planning on closing. So America needs its own tungsten mine. I mean, 2015 is the last time they mined it. And tungsten has shown itself, especially in these last conflicts that Washington has gotten itself into, it's shown that it plays an oversized role, more critical than most elements, much larger role than most people understand. It's not just a metal, it's national resilience and survival. The U.S. government is putting billions of dollars on the line. So the question is, can Volt Strategic Mining get the job done? Volt's operating model is straightforward. Acquire historic mines, use modern exploitation tech to maximize value. You know, the first rule of business, as they say, is location, location, location. So tungsten, which is priced near record highs, and Volt is right there in the place that it needs to be. They're not looking for new plays. They're not out exploring new areas that are high risk because maybe there is something there, maybe there isn't something there. They're located in mining-friendly states, such as Nevada, where is their flagship operation. And they're bringing back, revitalizing tungsten mines that were first put online back in World War II under the Defense Minerals Exploration Act. These are the mines that helped bring the minerals that defended the free world and beyond World War II. These are proven deposits, and they're going to be filling the needs of the U.S. government that are now in existence. So Interstage Right, Volt Strategic Mining. It's trading under NOX. In Canada, it's KNOX, that's a sign in Canada, and KNXFF, that's a sign in the U.S. They're in the midst of setting up the biggest tungsten strategic project, not just in the U.S., but possibly in all of North America. So what I'm saying here is that this is a de-risked opportunity. They're not looking for new plays. This is a proven area. And tungsten is key, and globally, its prices are skyrocketing. Governments, corporations, they've all realized how much they need it, not just for military, but also for civilian uses. And they're all scrambling right now to get their hands and lock in reliable sources. So areas like the Great Basin, So this is an area in Nevada. And it's getting some serious attention. This is, by the way, where the flagship operation, Project Avolt, is located, in Nevada. This is North America's historic tungsten belt. The USGS estimated 168,000 tons of tungsten oxide could be located in this area. I mean, and then again, and this is a proven reserve. These are proven reserves that were exploited for quite a long time before one reason or another they were put down and people started importing. And consider today's high prices. That could be an equivalent to that, 168 tons. It could be equivalent to $30 to $50 billion in the ground, and probably higher because prices are going to continue rising. Demand is skyrocketing, and markets are catching on to all of these shortages. Don't get me wrong. There's smart people working there. They're figuring this out. That, oh my God, we need to lock in these sources. The position could appreciate a lot more than it is right now. And a lot of value, and Volt sitting right in the middle of that value.
Now this is where it all gets real interesting. In under 12 months, so less than a year, the U.S. government has taken five major steps to rebuild its mineral supply chains, which are in a horrible condition. This includes the Executive Order 14231 for 14231, Project Volt. There are 55 foreign ministries focused directly on these critical minerals. All this is driven by the fact that the U.S. no longer mines tungsten commercially since 2015. This is why Washington has committed $12 billion for Project Volt and additional federal support, all to establish and secure domestic supply. Washington is in overdrive. Let's not kid ourselves, as they tend to be at when they realize how bad off they are. This has become a national priority. The Pentagon is now actively funding and developing domestic supply chains for the very tungsten that is in the ground at the Volt project. This is an active White House directive. Volt is working hard, systematically assembling what will shape up to be probably the biggest massive U.S. tungsten, and not just U.S., probably North American tungsten profile. Portfolio. If you want to learn more about this, check out my description. There's a link in the description that'll take you to Volt's page where you can learn more about the opportunities that Volt has. And again, a special thanks to Volt Strategic Mining for making today's video possible. And now back to the video.
Hello, dear friends. Just want to remind you, if you like this video, or you like what you hear, click like, subscribe if you haven't subscribed yet, send it to your friends. Let's grow this channel. Maybe we can finally hit it up to 100,000. That'd be a good round number for the summer. So let me know, leave some comments, and give a thumbs up. So look forward to seeing you in the next video. Cheers.
Basically, maybe neocons are not happy with what has happened, but people outside, nobody has some sort of positive memory of him. Every time I remember him, he was talking about new wars, killing more people, sending more weapons to Ukraine, sending more weapons to Israel, and all these people. We have to fight. We have to go inside, sending troops on the ground in Iran. We have to intensify the attacks on Iran. We have to do something deep inside Russian soil. It was all about escalations. I don't remember him talking about any, you know, basically de-escalating or reducing the fight or making peace or the. No, he was the military-industrial complex guy, in my opinion. He was basically working for military-industrial, as Ray McGovern called his Mickey Matt, military-industrial, congressional,
yep,
think tank, you know, media, and all together. He was part of that cycle, that circle. And maybe there are people right now in the United States that are not happy. Donald Trump is not happy about that. I was hearing him talking about the Lindsey Graham. He was so sad. You can feel that in his voice. He was saddened a lot by hearing, you know, the departure of the Lindsey Graham. He passed away. And you know what amazes me, Stas? When I remember when he was asked the same question about Charlie Kirk. When Charlie Kirk was assassinated, he was asked in the White House, outside of the White House, you know, and he was asked, how do you feel about Charlie Kirk? He was assassinated, and how do you feel right now? It must be so difficult for you to get along with that, you know, with that news. He said, I feel good. Look at that structure, the new structure we're building. He was talking about the ballroom.
Yep.
Look at that structure. It's amazing. It's going to be huge. It's going to be beautiful. But today, when he was talking about, I was hearing him talking about Lindsey Graham, he was really sad. You feel that in his voice. This is the difference. It shows the guy is totally, for those people who voted for Donald Trump, who thought that Donald Trump is an outsider, he came here to change the course, change the foreign policy of the United States. No, the guy is the very establishment of the United States, is the part of the neocon movement. I think that it shows that, you know, the reaction to Charlie Kirk compared to Lindsey Graham. He was, maybe in his first term, he was not part of these people. But second term, I can confirm each and every policy of his administration was in favor of neocons' foreign policy.
That's a very interesting point. I haven't heard anybody bring that point up about Kirk. And by the way, there's more controversy now that the first trials are going on with Kirk's assassination. And it's just raising even more questions about, you know, in my view, me and Larry Johnson, we went through it pretty in depth, and Larry went through it at every microsecond and watching something that he pointed out. We were looking at the video, you know. First of all, I said right off the bat, that's not a 30-06. 30-06 would have taken half his damn neck off, not to make a little hole that is bleeding out. And Larry is looking at it, look, you know, his whole chest pumps up forward and his arms are pulling up, but that's an auto jerk reaction from the nerves. Basically, his heart was ripped. A bullet went in, something small shattered, went through his heart and then popped out through his neck. The guy was dead on a spot. But what's come out is Ben Shapiro's over there. Did you hear this one? Ben Shapiro's talking about how his security, Charlie Kirk security, was calling Ben security to keep them informed as they're trying to get him to a hospital.
I have never heard
that. Oh yeah, Shapiro is now stating that. Shapiro, whose security is made up of whom? IDF.
So
why would, and they hated each other, so why would they be calling him? Maybe, you know, check in and tell him the status of the operation. Just saying, I don't know, you know, maybe, but that leaves a lot of questions.
I heard the assessment of Larry. We talk about the Charlie Kirk assassination for hours,
mm-hmm.
Larry and I. And I really believe that there is something going on with that microphone in his T-shirt. Because you see the microphone is inside the SAS. Mm-hmm. It's not outside. The magnet is outside. The microphone is inside. And there is a tail connected to that microphone. And when you see, because when you go like this, the T-shirt is going so strange.
Yeah, it's from the shockwave. It's a shockwave inside the body. It's pushing the T-shirt. Mm. You really have to look. It's easy to miss unless you're looking at it at microsecond pauses and, you know, stepping it forward. Then it's obvious. But if you're just looking at it, it's so easy to miss without noticing it.
Then you mean that he was hit in the heart and.
The bullet, more likely the bullet fragmented we're discussing the bullet might have come in between his ribs, fragmented inside, hitting something, bone, either spine or maybe the ribs, and then a portion of it shot out from his neck. 5.56 rounds with lead head can do that. that they tumble because they deform, and then they can ricochet inside the body, and they can split. They can come out, hit you in the shoulder and come out your right buttocks, and just cut everything in between. It's a it at one point lead rounds at a 5.56 caliber. There was an attempt in the UN to make them illegal as a inhumane weapon or an inhumane ammunition. It didn't pass, obviously, but yeah, there's that. So I don't know. I mean, at end of the day, I don't know. Only if somebody did a full autopsy and opened up and saw where the
There
cavities.
is no autopsy out
Yeah,
there.
I
There
know.
is no report of
I know.
autopsy.
I know. Which raises even more questions. I'm not even going into the rifle and why would somebody take a rifle apart and they did it in a record time that you couldn't do it. I mean that kind of hunting rifle you don't take apart in a minute. Yeah, and then even the idiotic thing about oh he shoved a barrel down his pant leg and the stock down the other pant leg and then somehow was still able to bend his knees to jump off a building and run. And then for some reason reassembled it and tossed it in the it's an idiotic story for illiterate people. Anyone with half a dime's worth of sense,
I think with the case of Charlie Kirk, we're focusing so much on the details of the assassination. The main question would be cui bono? Who's going to benefit from that? Who has
Absolutely.
some sort of game in that? That's the question. They killed it from, inside someone inside the crowd hit him, or someone from. That's the secondary question. The first question would be who's going to benefit from assassination? And I think we have some sort of concept, we have some sort of understanding about that. And the guy was somehow changing its mind, and they knew how impactful, how
Oh, man.
powerful the movement he started with, TPUSA was so much supportive of Donald Trump. They helped Donald Trump tremendously to be elected. So then moving away from Israelis, moving away from the support of the Zionists and trying to reshape, America first right now. It's not about Israeli first. And he started with this sort of tough rhetoric against Muslim people in the Middle Eastern. Then he find out, no, there are people in the middle, there are countries in the Middle East that they have Christians, they have Jews, they have all living together. And it was some sort of surprise for him. It happened during these talks he had on the campus of various universities. And he went there, he learned a lot, and he changed his mindset toward Israel. I think they thought that he could be the next president, or he
Oh,
could
yeah.
have the chance to be the president of the United States. So what else can they do? Let's do something before it's too late for us. I think that's the main point for Charlie Kirk. And it's
Yeah,
not that
yeah.
just about the SAS. It's not just about Charlie Kirk. The whole administration, the way that I think the Trump administration is so different from the first administration. And Trump 1.0 was totally different from 2.0. There were three or four assassination attempts on Donald Trump. They were trying to assassinate him. Nobody knows who were those guys, what was the main reason. And nothing came out. FBI is part of his administration, and Kash Patel is the guy. He appointed Kash Patel as the head of FBI. Why in the world we cannot get anything, any information about those people who tried to assassinate him, if they tried that? So there is something going on within the administration. I don't know what does that mean. Donald Trump is not 100% there. The guy is
Oh,
calling Iran, he's calling the Islamic Republic of Japan. It's something
that's
basically
a
hugely
dangerous
wrong
power.
with this guy.
Yeah. And they fired 110 missiles at an American aircraft carrier. But you're right. You're absolutely right. And something else. It was interesting how fast his organization was taken over. And apparently they had already put paperwork in to transfer ownership of the organization. And so on within 24 hours. The Shapiro
Exactly.
to others, it raises a lot of questions. You're absolutely right.
The day after, or if I'm not mistaken, 4 days or 3 days after the assassination, Ben Shapiro went there and said, I'm going to invest, I don't know, $1 million or something like that, $2 million in TP USA. I want to be part of the project. He said that. And assassination came out. I was, this guy was so supportive of Israel. I'm going to thank him. And he was asking if it was Israeli for, this, the whole case is somehow so unbelievably, vague. We don't know that much about Charlie Kirk. It's because of Donald Trump and his administration. It's not, they don't have a Democrat government to put the blame on them. It's his administration.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you're absolutely right. It's nothing to do with the people. I mean, Trump was always a heavy pro-Israeli, like every American president since the last American president that stood up to the Israelis was Papa Bush. That was it. He actually pulled their funding. He cut them off, and then Clinton switched them back on. And Reagan forced them out of Lebanon. But that was it. After that, it's a gravy train.
There is nothing there anymore. Nothing there.
What do you think Trump has restarted the war? It can't be economics.
I think you're talking about the current conflict in the West Asia between the problem
Phase
is
three,
right
phase
now.
10, whatever phase we're on now.
The so-called MOU, and that's a joke. I think what I would say, what does Iran have right now to counter to fight against the United States is the Strait of Hormuz. That's the key. There is nothing else out of that war, because the two sides were fighting each other, and they were hitting the targets. Americans were hitting the targets inside Iran. And because the reality of the military industrial complex in Iran, which was designed since, 30, more than 2 decades ago, they have started this program all underground. They didn't have any access to that, cities, underground cities. They hit some targets, but they didn't damage those cities at all. So as soon as the ceasefire was announced, Iran got back to the same cities, to the same in the southern part of Iran. They're using the same missiles and drones and all of those weapons. That was the outcome for the United States. On the part of Iranians, they know that most of these facilities, those weapons, are basically on the ground and on the surface, and they can hit as they did with the American bases in the region, as they did in Israel. They hit the latest day of the war before ceasefire being announced. If you remember, Iran hit the targets in Dimona, Israel, to show their capabilities, and they can hit the target, which was a huge surprise for Israelis. And we had Benjamin Netanyahu going to the site to see what was the damage in Dimona, because Dimona was supposed to be the most protected area in Israel. If they can penetrate Dimona, just imagine what would be the outcome for other sites in Israel. So that's why the United States decided to announce the ceasefire. And then you see what is going on right now. The United States in Israel, CNN yesterday reported that the Trump administration doesn't want Israel to be part of the operation because they want to control the operation. And if Israel comes in, they're going to do something crazy, maybe of that. But my opinion is that Donald Trump doesn't want Israel, or maybe we know that. My understanding is the two sides are cooperating with these attacks. There is no separation between the two sides. But the rhetoric, the official rhetoric, is just, it says it's just the United States attacking Iran because they don't want Iran to attack Israel. If Iran attacks Israel with Ben Gurion, air base, they have multiple various, fighter jets or fueling tankers there, and they're going to hit those targets in Israel. And the other point on the part of the United States is they want to continue this war or this tit-tat sort of war between Iran and the United States. That's why they came out with this MOU, which basically means nothing, no outcome so far with the case. The first clause, Lebanon, they made the day after they made a new MOU between Lebanon and Israel, and it's gone, violated. The clause number five is the Strait of Hormuz. The United States is still trying to open up the Strait of Hormuz using the same strategy as they had with Operation Freedom, which failed, by the way. And last night, what we've heard, I don't know if that would be the case. The Iranian special forces went to the southern part of the strait to mine the southern part. If they do that, they're basically forcing the United States to use the northern part of the strait, which is under the control of IRGC. And I think if the reports were right last night, and we're going to see some sort of, if not, ultimately, you're going to see Iran doing that. That's one of the solutions on the part of Iranians to mine in the strait all the routes that are not designated by IRGC. That would be their strategy. And when it comes to the war of attrition, the continuation of the war, it doesn't make sense to me because hitting some targets in the southern part of Iran is not that important to influence the whole economy or military power of Iran, or influencing their capabilities to fight back, to fire back at you. So it's so confused. And the only understanding, the only outcome for me is that these people don't know what they're doing. Because if they knew what would be the outcome, they would have never started the war on February 28th.
Well, for God's sakes, they could have just listened to all the experts online who were telling them that was a disaster waiting, but they didn't.
Yeah, no, they don't care. Donald Trump is the guy is running the show. We know how capable he is. He doesn't. He I would say he doesn't know what's in MOU. What's in the MOU? He just signed it. He doesn't know what's in it.
You mean he'd have
Maybe
to read
some.
it?
No, he didn't read it. In my opinion, because every time you remember when they had the meeting in Switzerland, the two sides coming together, before the meeting he posted, "I'm gonna kill you, I'm gonna hit Iran harder," which is part of the MOU. In the MOU says if you threaten the other side, you're gonna be MOU is gonna be over. He's doing this. He doesn't know. The guy is the problem is the tragedy is that he's the president of the United States.
Oh,
He
no.
has, And nobody knows. I don't know what is the sentiment in Russia. He said when he was in Turkey, he said that the war in Ukraine doesn't impact the United States. So we're not that much interested in them. If they want to negotiate, they can negotiate. The two sides want to negotiate, want to put an end. Let's do it. And the same sort of rhetoric he had since he was elected in the United States. Basically, he doesn't care about the war in Ukraine because he's making money out of Ukraine, in my opinion. Making a lot of money. And when it comes to the West Asia, it's the case is somehow different because the Strait of Hormuz is hitting the US economy, and that's a real problem for Donald
Oh,
Trump.
absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, I mean, he's making money. Well, I think he doesn't care to stop Project Ukraine. Project Ukraine is it's profitable, and the deep state wants it. And did you enjoy the clip out of the NATO summit where Trump and Zelensky are now best friends? As if there was ever any doubt. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, this is all about theater, political theater stuff. I remember when he was arguing with Zelensky in Washington and saying, "You're not gonna do that. I'm gonna do this." And these people are basically manipulating all, because they know that there are people in Russia, in Iran, that they want to hear that there is some sort of difference. These people are doing, they're serious. They want to put it. The guy could have put an end to the war in the 20, he said that in 24 hours. He said, I'm not going to help him. I'm not going to help you. Go ahead and do it by yourself.
He could switch Simple. Starlink off and that would be over.
Exactly. Exactly. That's all. No drone gonna hit the target. That's all. It shows that, you know, Elon Musk, he said, these people are so connected. They're profiting from these wars.
Of course.
We are missing the big picture.
Yep,
the big picture of the war in the Middle East and of the war in Ukraine is those people who are profiting from these wars. And they're running the show. They have the Congress. They have the president. They have, you know, the oligarchs. And Elon Musk is part of that circle. So how can you imagine that these people are going to go against the policy?
Of course.
And do they care about Ukraine? When they say Ukraine is winning, what does that mean? Which is what Ukraine is winning? Which part of Ukraine is winning? Who's winning in Ukraine? The people are winning. Zelensky is winning. Who's winning? No. I think the answer is the military industrial complex is winning in Ukraine.
Yep.
That's why they're
not the Ukrainian military industrial complex. Exactly.
The U.S. military industrial complex. Yeah. Not even European military industrial complex. Yep. They don't have that much of capabilities in Europe. And we know the situation with the energy in Europe and how dependent they are on the United States, on the energy sector. And with this case of the West Asia, their problem is growing in Europe, in Germany, in France. That's why you see France going to Oman, talking with the Omani government to open up the Strait of Hormuz, and we're going to do it. These sort of activities on their part is out of desperation. They're desperate in Europe.
Oh, absolutely.
But when I'm talking about Mickey Mad, as Ray McGovern says, that the Mickey Mad military, industrial, congressional, think tank, media, all together, it's in the United States and is profiting from the wars.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's like, well, it's not just profiting from the wars. I mean, look, the end result goal is to dominate the resources and the industries that they don't have. That would be Russia. That would be Iran. And in the end, that'll be China. And then everybody else will just fall in line. At least that's their concept. So, you know, Iran needs to be replaced regime-wise. Russia needs to be destroyed into 40 different countries or 30 different countries, 20 different countries. Who cares at that point? Yeah?
Yeah.
So what's from the Iranian side? What do you think they're going to continue playing tit for tat or just finally just unleash and wipe what's left of the American bases out?
No, tit for tat. Iran's policy right now is to close completely the Strait of Hormuz. Unless the United States decides to do something in Lebanon, to do something in the Strait of Hormuz. And as the head of the Iranian parliament said, they're basically violating the clause number 5 or paragraph number 5 of MOU.
That Trump never read.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But they have the document signed by Donald Trump, at least.
That you Trump signed never this read. Document.
What are you doing in the Strait of Hormuz? It says the mechanism is managed by Iranians. Is managed. It mentioned in that clause, in that paragraph. So they have some sort of document to argue. If you're here, we're going to close the Strait of Hormuz. It doesn't matter. What else can you do? You're going to attack us. We're going to retaliate. And not only the Strait of Hormuz, the case of Lebanon. I firmly believe, Stas, that Iran, the only solution, the only leverage, the region or the acts of resistance has is the Strait of Hormuz. And there is no way to put pressure on the United States. No one is capable. Since the war started, I thought maybe these GCC countries that are investing a lot in the United States, they may have something to say in the United States, or their lobbies in the United States could do something. But these are not important players for the United States.
At the end of the day,
they can be removed easily from the scene. Even Erdogan, Turkey is not that important.
Yep.
They don't have any leverage over the United States. The only leverage is the Strait of Hormuz on the United States.
Oh, no. There's another leverage. Israel.
Yeah, Israel. Yeah. Now I'm talking about on the part of the acts of resistance, on the part of Iranians, how
Yeah.
you can put pressure on the United States to do something about the Israeli behavior in the region. The only way is the Strait of Hormuz. There is no other solution. None
Yeah.
of these governments have the capabilities to put pressure on the United States. This is the reality. This is many people should understand that. And whoever is trying to help Donald Trump, and it is Turkey or Türkiye or other GCC countries, they don't understand if they want to put, if the main issue is Palestine and Israeli occupation in the southern part of Lebanon or in Syria, the only solution is the Strait of Hormuz and the American economy. When you
Yep.
put pressure on the American economy, then the pressure goes to those oligarchs, and they're losing more money, and they put pressure on the foreign policy of the United States. That's the only way, in my opinion.
I don't think it's even the oligarchs, because a lot of those oligarchs, like it or not, are Israelis. They have dual citizenship. I think it's the fact that there's an election on, coming up. That's probably the only thing that I think Trump wouldn't even care. If it wasn't elections, I don't think he would even care.
The guy is the second term of Donald Trump. I think what he cares a lot is about who's going to be the next president of the United States and how can they
Trump.
put pressure on Donald Trump. Yeah. If Democrats, let's assume this, midterm elections are so important. The outcome of those are so important. Not only, impeaching Donald Trump, putting political pressure on his administration is part of the game on the part of Democrats. But what matters the most, in my opinion, is the next president of the United States. Is it going to be Republican or Democrat? And that could bring, because they know they're watching what how the Trump how Donald Trump himself and his family are getting so rich. They're just making a lot of money, and they're going to go after him. They're going to go after him. And Donald Trump has each and every interest in the next president of the United States. Is he going to blow or destroy everything? Or he's going to do something for the next president? Or maybe he wants to support J.D. Vance or Marco Rubio to be the next president. This is the question in my mind. And he cares. He really cares about the next president. That's the key, in my opinion.
You think he's going to try to do term number three or fourth election victory, as he puts it? He would pull it. They had they had an interesting rally where Addison, she comes over there and oh yeah, I'll give him $240 million. I'll give it to him again, and we've got lawyers working on changing the basically they're talking about changing the Constitution or going around the amendment, and Trump for a third term, and they were like third term. You're like, So I'm not sure what he may try.
No, I don't think that he's gonna go that far. He's mentally not there anymore. I don't know if he's gonna end up his second term in a good, sort of conditions. And the guy is just these signs that are coming out of every time he's talking about the wars, some domestic and out, some domestic problems or the problems in Ukraine, in the Middle East, and considering foreign policy of the United States, you understand the guy is not that sharp
No.
anymore.
Or he was never that
And
sharp to
this is
begin
a
with.
serious
But
problem for
yeah.
him. He doesn't want the guy has a big ego, the biggest ego that you can imagine. He doesn't want to be, he knows that if he goes that far, it gets something like, Joe Biden. You remember Joe Biden in the last, days or months of before, being, before ending his term, everybody was making joke about Joe
Yeah,
Biden.
but
He doesn't want to be in that sort of position.
I don't think Biden cared, because
He
I don't
was not
think Biden
functional. He was
understood
not
what the, yeah,
functional.
he's non-functional. But I don't know if Trump would actually even realize that though. I mean, when
He's
it's
there.
a nar he's
He's
a
so
narcissist.
close to the Joe Biden,
He's
because
a
when
narcissist
Joe
though.
Biden, during the when he was running against Joe Biden, and Joe Biden, when he was running for the presidency, you can see the signs, the way he was talking about the issues. And those signs are appearing in the Trump's behavior right now. That's why I don't see Donald Trump continuing 2028 being presidential, you know, candidate or anything. This is delusional. And the guy, there is a guy who is, you know, making these sort of arguments, this so-called Professor Jiang. And the guy is so...
Well, he's no professor, let's begin with that. He's a high school teacher.
He's
right off the bat, he's no professor.
What amazes me that everybody, I talked with him once because I thought that he has some points, but when I talk with him, this guy is AI. And it's not real. He has a lot of information. He gets basically from the everyday information, some statistics, this and that. But when it comes to the outcomes, he's basically making absurd arguments about everything. Well, right now, he's talking, you know, the latest argument when it comes to the war in Ukraine, he says, Russia is trapped. Russia is somehow losing the war in Ukraine.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, that's what everybody in the West says from the leadership.
Israel gonna dominate the whole West Asia. It's going to call it the Pax Judaica.
Yes, I heard that.
The guy is...
Did you catch where he said that Trump is preparing an army of 650,000 soldiers waiting for winter to invade Iran? Like, wait a minute.
Exactly.
The entirety of the American Army plus Marine Corps is 540. And that's not combat soldiers. That's everybody. There's maybe like 120,000 combat soldiers. He's got 650,000 combat soldiers. Like, never mind. Where would you hide them that the satellites wouldn't see? You know, the guy. Yeah, you're right. You think he's AI or do you think he's a human being just full of shit?
I think he's... Actually, I talked with Scott Ritter once. He said, that the guy is AI. I said, Scott, I think you have a point by mentioning that. The guy is AI.
But he's responding pretty fast to people's questions. But, I mean, he's full of crap.
But the guy is... Because he's basically getting all this information from AI and he's preparing for this talk.
Oh, you think he's a human being just working with AI? Or is he just AI?
No, I'm not talking about his AI, literally AI. Oh. He's using AI to gather these sort of absurd ideas about, you know, these are geopolitical issues. These are real issues.
Just to make an assertion, 650,000. First of all, with modern satellite technology, how would you hide that? Never mind that. That's 650,000 combat troops. You're going to need another 1.5 to 2 million to support that. Convoys of trucks, you know, just the logistics of it. So if anybody with any sense of understanding of supply chain logistics would know, that's impossible. It's just freaking impossible. Maybe in 3 years of building up, I mean, and a draft and all that, you could do that. U.S. could do that. If marshaled everything it had, called a draft and all that, in 3 to 4 years, and could find a place to stay that, where you could marshal them without getting hit by Iranian missiles all the time, too, while you're at it. But, yeah, it's... I stopped listening to... I understood how full of crap he was when he did the Pax Israel.
Pax Judaica,
yeah.
That's a go.
That guy. Oh, my God. But he's gotten pretty popular, though, for being full of crap.
Because, you know, there are people out... I literally... My understanding, there's some people helping him with the algorithm. I don't know who's that force is. Larry Johnson said once, I had a discussion with Larry Johnson. He says he believes that the guy is a Mossad agent.
Yeah, maybe.
Every time he talks, he said Mossad doing this and that, you know, he goes, basically the whole argument is against CIA and Mossad. But when it comes to the conclusion, it's totally in favor of the Mossad agenda and CIA agenda. That's
maybe
why,
a CIA agent. Yeah, he maybe not Mossad, but they're pretty joined at the hip.
Exactly.
Yeah,
Because
he may
the
be.
outcome is literally, you know, the outcome is what they want. And
Yeah. You're right. You're
he
right.
penetrated those people who are angry, who don't like these sort of policies. He's talking the same way the people, the audience like it, and then comes to the conclusion totally the opposite way. He said,
So
so
he's
all I said,
manipulating them.
you know, one of the strange things that he said that when the moment that the United States leaves the West Asia, that is the moment that Israel is gonna capture all those American bases as gonna be the is gonna be the dominant force in the West Asia. How you can make sense of it?
Well, because there's 650,000 American combat soldiers waiting for winter.
No, he says Israel is replacing the United States using the same air bases, the same bases in the West Asia, becoming the dominant power. How can you? I told him, I asked him, how can you imagine a country of 8 million people gonna dominate the whole West Asia? I said, they're gonna use the chips and in the people, they're gonna put it inside people and they're gonna, you know, control the whole region. You're just doing an amazing job with these conspiracy theories. And there are people just following him and thinking, this guy is so good. And they seek a lot of information. Yeah, the AI is working the best.
Trash in, trash out. I was asked several times, "Hey, won't you get them on?" I'm like, man, this guy's full of crap. I'm not putting them on my podcast. I'm sorry, I'm not talking to this guy. This guy's so full of crap. But it's I occasionally I listen to a little bit of his stuff just because it was some the big title. I'm like, what's he gonna say? Like, yep, same for full of crap. And when I say occasional, I mean very rarely, but. After the Pax Americana, at Pax Judea, like I said, the second time I listened to him was like a couple of months later when he started talking about the 650,000 Phantom American combat soldiers. I guess, you know, maybe they're robots, you know, waiting for winter. I guess if they're
It's
robots, they
all
wouldn't care if
strange.
it's
It's all
winter.
strange. It's all strange. Yeah. It's
That guy is, yeah, but again, yeah.
fraud.
You're right. They've got to be gaming the system because, man, he is just everywhere and like that. I mean, there's no
Exactly.
buildup. He's just there.
They penetrated the alternative media using this guy. They
Oh, yeah.
literally penetrated. And you see, I had him on my podcast. He goes on other podcasts
Oh, yeah.
in the alternative media, and these are not good signs, I
No.
think, because they tried, it's part of the plan to
Of course, of
penetrate,
course.
to influence those audience who are not listening anymore to the mainstream media,
Of course.
basically defeating them. Yeah.
Yeah, Ron Paul, when he was senator, he had a sign on his desk. It was a lot of photographs. I mean, I don't know Ron Paul personally. I know one of the people close to him, Daniel McAdams, but I don't know him personally. But there was a lot of photos of this sign that was on his desk. And it said, "Don't steal. The government doesn't like competition." It's the same. Don't try to don't try to explain things to the world to the population. The government doesn't like competition, so of course they're trying to penetrate. That's a gimme. That's something we should just understand. At every chance, they're going to try to penetrate. And you're right. I think you're absolutely right. This guy more likely is. Because for somebody to be that full of crap and
It's impossible.
everywhere, like, holy.
And just looking at the his contents is are basically they're mostly focused on the case of Israel.
Yeah. Not
Mostly
even
on
on
the case of
China
Israel.
or
Is no. He
the
says
West Pacific.
China doesn't have any strategy. They're these Chinese before Donald Trump going to China. Just imagine, before Donald Trump going to China, he said, this is going to be the most important visit of China for the, you know, president of the United States is going there and China going to make a deal. They're going to, put pressure on Iran. They're going to do this and that, improve the relationship. They're going to receive oil from the United States. Basically, literally everything he said was wrong. China is not going to be dependent on the United States when it comes to the oil and energy because they know the United States sees them as their enemy. And
oh,
how
yeah,
can
of
you be
course.
Dependent when it comes to the oil and energy sector?
Oh, I'm pretty sure that Trump wanted to come in there and look at Xi and throw the head of Venezuela and the head of Iran on the table and go, "You're mine." I'm sure that was his plan. But that didn't work out. I mean, he got Venezuela by just, you know, I kept getting asked, especially on Russian television, what's the American secret weapon they used? Like, it's called the dollar. You know, that's the whole secret weapon, man. It ain't that secret. It's powerful. I mean, I'll give it that, but it's not secret. They just bought anybody and everybody they could buy.
It's everywhere.
But that doesn't work too well with Iran, but it worked real well with Venezuela. But yeah, so, you know, he couldn't quite throw. He got that one head on the table. He couldn't find the second head to throw on the table. So he had to push it back a month. And then, you know, it's like whether now or never. But I didn't listen to Zhang about that trip. Wow. Wow. Yeah, that guy's fake. He's as fake as a wooden nickel.
He came. It came out of nowhere.
China has no plan. I mean, China.
No plan, no strategy. China. It's all about making money. It's all about making money. Nothing about the security, nothing about the strategy, military strategy, you know, geopolitical strategy, nothing. The guy is so...
Yeah. If you told me Germany has no plan, yeah, you could probably believe that. But China?
Yeah.
No long-term plan? I mean, these people plan in like decades and centuries. You know?
Yeah. He says, you don't know China. I'm here in China. I live with these people. I do this and that. So I know Chinese people better because...
Has anybody had a photo of him in China, like recently, recent China?
Yeah, recently there is a guy called Cyrus, if I'm not mistaken. He went to China and met him in his apartment in China. I don't know why did he do that, because many people were arguing, who's this guy? Because latest time I talked with Larry Johnson, this guy doesn't live in China. Doesn't live in China. And you invite one of the podcasters in your apartment in China to show what? It means, you know, it's all about legitimizing the question, these doubts on the part of it from outside. Who's this guy? He came out of nowhere. He has no understanding. He's a teacher, as a high school teacher. He calls himself Professor Jiang. When he came to my podcast, he literally wrote down his name as Professor Jiang.
Yeah, I've seen him.
It's all, you know, it doesn't matter if he lived, if he went to China to do this podcast or he lives there. What is important to me, because my mind is mathematic. I don't like this sort of, you know, I want to see the outcome. Right. I want to see the numbers. I want to see the argument. I don't care about you live in China, you live in Brazil, you live in Iran, or just make these things coming together. His argument doesn't make sense mathematically. Doesn't make sense. It's not there. It's all based on conspiracy theories. It's all based on that. And so many people like these sort of conspiracies, they can follow him. They can be deceived. They can be manipulated. This is my understanding.
Yeah, I fully agree with you. I fully agree. I've got a hard stop. I've got to do another program, and then my day is done. I want to thank you very much for coming on, Yuma. It's always a pleasure. And I think you're absolutely right, 100%. This guy, and people need to watch out, because you're right. He's very popular, and he is very manipulative in the wrong direction. Yeah.
Exactly.
Pan-Judea, baby. Pan-Judea. from the Mongolian highlands all the way down to Morocco. It's going to be Pan-Judea.
Yeah.
And nobody else. They'll kick all the other people out. Yeah. Oh, man. Thank you. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Tell us in the comments, what do you all think of Pan-Judea? Yeah, Mongolian highlands all the way to the Moroccan highlands.